Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. About a half an hour, we're going to be joined by Scott Ross. He is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. We talked about his organization last night. That's the organization that provided the information that was picked up by Daily Kos yesterday about an unholy triad, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, that is trying to screw up the elections in Wisconsin. It's the Koch brothers with their Prosperity for America horse crap. The Republican Party and the Teabaggers. What they're planning on doing is caging voters, and we explained it all last night, but we're going to go through it again tonight with Scott Ross. That'll be in about a half an hour, okay? Now, to the really important stuff, would that this were the really important stuff. This is the autumn equinox, and it's also here in the Northern Hemisphere. Or does that work in the Southern Hemisphere, too? I realize it's the spring equinox there, but I'm talking about the full moon. You should know that, right? There is a harvest moon out there tonight. If you've not been outside, for heaven's sake, just go out and take a look. If you're someplace where there's, you know, the skies are clear, it is pretty incredible. And then with Jupiter right next to the moon, or not far away from the moon, it's like a science fiction movie or something. It's really cool. Anyway, Bridget Wolf, one of our two ethics monitors for this program. Somebody said to me, what the hell are ethics monitors for your program? You know how the New York Times, the Washington Post, they have public editors, ombudsman, a person who reads the New York Times, reads the letters that come in, and then makes decisions whether or not New York Times is acting like a responsible newspaper. That's an idea that's totally foreign to, say, Fox News or the New York Post. But they, Bridget and our other ethics monitor, Bob Alexander, they do not listen to every single thing we do. They do not read every single piece of email that comes in. What they do is monitor the program. And if something is presented that is untrue, or so far out in, the ozone as to warrant a correction, and I don't correct it the next night, then I get, an email from them. All that to just let you know that our ethics advisors are real. It's not just like Kay Petrini, our education affairs. Bruce Enberg, our economic affairs. Who is our military? Sharon Gordy. These are real people. We had to cut their pay severely, too. Anyway, Bridget sent this in, autumn equinox. You can sense it, the change of light, a slight brush of cool in the air, the blush of red in the leaves. Autumn gathers her mantle and prepares to sing the world to sleep. It is the time of harvest and hunting, the time to seek balance, just as the day and night reach equality. We give thanks for the bounty of summer and prepare ourselves for the quiet contemplation of winter. It is the autumnal equinox, occurring this year, tonight, at 8:10 p.m. Pacific time, 9:10 p.m. all the way back to 11:10 p.m. Eastern time. The word equinox was derived from the Latin term equinoctium, which in turn comes from equus, equal, and nox, night. It refers to the time that occurs twice a year when the nighttime is equal to the daytime, each being 12 hours in duration. This occurs because the tilt of the Earth's axis is inclined neither away from nor toward the sun, the center of the sun being in the same plane as the Earth's equator. Our calendars mark it as the beginning of autumn. But in the cultures here in the Northern Hemisphere, but in the cultures more closely aligned to the seasonal cycles, it's actually the midpoint. In fairy or paganism, autumn begins August 1st and ends October 31st. That's assuming they follow our calendar, the fairies, which they really don't. Since it's also an astronomical midpoint, this time invites us to contemplate balance and movement from one state of being to another. We have been reveling in the exuberant growth that comes with the summer sun. As we finish harvesting the fruits of the summer, what lies ahead as we step across the threshold to the longer nights and inward-turning energy of the months ahead? We mortals may not be able to balance an egg on its end on the equinox, an urban legend in the human world, but the fairies can. Of course, they are capable of that feat any day of the year. What we mortals can do at this special time is to meditate for a moment on how we manage the balance in our own lives. Is there reasonable equilibrium between mind and emotions, between body and spirit? Spend a few moments at this special time to harvest your internal fruits to sustain you through the coming inward times. From Bridget at fairywoodland.com. If you haven't been to that website, you're in for a treat. Fairy Woodland, just like it sounds, fairywoodland.com. Okay, enough of the really insignificant nonsense like the fall equinox and internal gazing and thought and balance. You know, who the hell comes up with that? Huh? That's not Christian. That's not Muslim or Islam or Judaism. Which is kind of the point. Right before airtime, I get this... Liz Cheney is crazy. I mean, she really is. She ought to shut her mouth and go spend time with her heartless, literally, father, who will soon die. How long can you live with blood gushing through your heart with no heartbeat, no pulse? But no, Liz Cheney is, like so many of these bagger freaks, is clinically insane. Now, there's a reason for it. Can you imagine if your father was Dick Cheney? No, neither can I. She is the chair vampire of something called Keep America Safe. Yeah, right. No, this is not irony. This is fact. She came out with a statement today criticizing President Obama for telling Bob Woodward in Woodward's newest book that America, quote, can absorb a terrorist attack, end quote, which is exactly what Barack Obama said. In the book, Barack Obama tells Carl Woodward, quote, we can absorb a terrorist attack. We'll do everything we can to prevent it. But even a 9/11, even the biggest attack ever, we absorbed it and we are stronger, end quote. So Liz Cheney waits until the sun has dipped behind the horizon where the rays of the sun won't hit her and cause her to catch fire and makes a statement. Now, I'm going to share this statement with you when we come back. And I want you to keep in mind what her father, when he ran this country for 8 years, and his puppet, Dick Cheney's puppet, George Bush, what they did to this country. Maliciously, criminally, they at the very least allowed the worst terrorist attack on this country since Pearl Harbor, since the War of 1812. Because, obviously, Hawaii was not an American state at the time. The worst terrorist attack on the soil of the United States since 1812, the War of 1812. And Liz Cheney's father is directly responsible for it. I want you to hear what this woman said when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Take the last plane out as we taxi down the runway. I can hear the people. one microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malone.
Scott Ross is going to join us in a few minutes. He is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. We had some phone problems earlier this evening. Power was off here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, which happens periodically. Luckily, it came back on before the program was to start. Don't tell me about backup generators. We have one, but it's very limited in its ability to keep everything going. In the process of knocking everything off, it also got our phones, but Kathy has rigged a phone system up. I hope it'll sound okay, but because I want you to hear Scott Ross. If it turns out to be a crappy sound coming through, we'll just reschedule him and do it again. Anyway, back to Cheney, whose father is directly responsible for every single death in Iraq since the invasion and occupation that he championed in 2003. He's and that's not just Americans and the wounding of Americans, but the deaths and wounding of countless hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. He is responsible for the deaths in Afghanistan. Cheney is. He is responsible for the deaths in New York City at the Pentagon and the plane crash in Pennsylvania. Dick Cheney is one of the bloodiest sons of bitches ever to have held power and office in this government. In terms of deaths that were a direct result of his incompetence and his lies. Dick Cheney. His daughter, reading the quote in Bob Woodward's new book, the quote from the president, "We Can Absorb a Terrorist Attack." This is what she said, quote, "Americans expect our president to do everything possible to defend the nation from attack. We expect him to use every tool at his disposal to find, defeat, capture, and kill terrorists." Now, as I read this, keep in mind what her father and her father's puppet did. "We expect him to deter attacks by making clear to our adversaries that an attack on the United States will carry devastating consequences. Instead, President Obama is reported to have said, 'We can absorb a terrorist attack.' This comment suggests an alarming fatalism on the part of President Obama and his administration. Once again, the president seems either unwilling or unable to do what it takes to keep this nation safe. The president owes the American people an explanation," end quote. I'll be a son of a bitch. I mean, you talk about somebody who the truth or reality is I don't know what it is, the surface of a soap bubble to this woman. I have no idea what dimension she runs her sad, tired, useless life in. But it's not the one where the rest of us live. Her father and her father's puppet, George, at the very least allowed, at the very worst, engineered the worst attack on this country since the War of 1812. And she has the audacity to make this kind of a statement. "Americans expect their president to do everything possible to defend the nation from attack." Where was your father after he deliberately authorized a stand down on a day, a time when he knew there was going to be an effort made to attack this country? I don't know why I give this psychopathic, misdirected woman. You ought to be out there planning your father's funeral, Liz, because I'm sure all the nation's bigwigs, especially the Republicans, are going to fall all over themselves to worship in front of his coffin. That's what you ought to be doing instead of making your filthy, insane, gratuitous statements about what the American people expects a president or an administration to do to protect us from terrorist attack. Shame on you, Liz Cheney. Go plan your father's funeral. Just go do that. Do at least one thing in your useless life that will have some meaning. Go plan his funeral. And why news media quotes this madwoman, I have no idea. We're not news media. We're a talk show. Anti-nomianism. antinomianism. That's a hard word, antinomianism. I'm going to tell you what that means later on in the program. But coming up right after this break, we'll be joined by Scott Ross, who is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. We're going to talk about what we talked about in this program last night. The plan by the Republican Party, Americans for Prosperity, which is the Koch brothers and the Teabaggers, to thwart the rights of voters in Wisconsin in the election coming up November 2nd, specifically the votes of so-called minorities and students. We'll be talking with Scott Ross when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Nothing left forever but the earth and sky.
Welcome back. It is 25 before the hour.
And as promised, even though we've got kind of a jury-rigged system here, joining us now is Scott Ross from Madison, Wisconsin. He's the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. Scott, welcome to the program.
Mike, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
We were talking last night, and as you're aware, about One Wisconsin Now. And more directly, we were quoting from a diary at Daily Kos about what is planned for Wisconsin, planned by the Republican Party, the Koch brothers, and the Teabaggers. And this idea of caging voters, and we explained last night that the term vote caging involves sending mail to addresses on voter lists and using return mail to challenge people at the polls on election day. And it's your organization that broke this story to begin with, is that correct?
Yes.
What is this all about? Let me toss you one that you can hit out of the park. What is this all about?
Well, basically, One Wisconsin Now received recordings and documents that this includes strategy memoranda, and it leads us to believe that there is a coordinated plot underway between the Republican Party of Wisconsin, Americans Prosperity Wisconsin, and organizations in the so-called Tea Party movement that are targeting minority voters and college students in a possibly illegal voter caging effort for voter suppression. And we have taken all of our evidence and provided it to both federal and state authorities so they can investigate to ensure both justice and democracy prevail. We've given formal requests for investigation to the U.S. Attorney's Office, as well as to the Wisconsin Attorney General's. He has an election integrity task force, and we've also given it to the State Government Accountability Board, demanding a full investigation to ensure the right to vote isn't stolen by these plans.
Mm-hmm. As we all know, I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that voter fraud seems to be an area that the federal government, under whomever, hates to get involved in, and that I'm not sure how it works with the state watchdog agencies. What kind of reaction or action do you expect from the voter fraud divisions that you've notified?
Well, here's the first thing, Mike. I mean, this doesn't just go on in Wisconsin. It goes on in states all around the country. What happens is that conservatives, Republicans, will go into voting booths or voting polling places on Election Day, and they'll come up with frivolous challenges to try and deny people access to the ballot. And not only are they successful sometimes in denying people access to the ballot, but their challenges create long lines.
Right, right.
And then people go home instead of voting. And so it's another form of voter suppression. It's a twofer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And Republicans are out there all the time, always screaming, voter fraud, voter fraud, voter fraud.
While they're committing it.
They have photo ID. They need, you know, in Wisconsin, they want to get rid of our same-day registration. And here's the facts. We have a Republican attorney general in Wisconsin. His name is J.B. Van Hollen. And he has been notoriously anti-voting. In fact, in 2008, he filed a frivolous lawsuit while he was co-chair of the McCain for President campaign to try and have 300,000 people thrown off the rolls, have their registration invalidated. And so for 20 months now, he has been investigating the 2008 elections and all the quote-unquote voter fraud. And right now, he's charged 11 people, and 8 of them were ex-offenders who were still on paper in the community and voted. So that, essentially, if you take the 3 million people who voted in Wisconsin in 2008, represents 0.004% of the vote that may have been improper. And yet they use these things as hammers in the media to try and say voter fraud, voter fraud, voter fraud. We need to have more restrictions on the right to vote. And what we believe our investigation has shown, and the documents and recordings we have found show, is that there is a concerted effort out there to do potentially illegal activities when it comes to voter caging that would deny students and minorities the right to access the polls.
Well, it sounds fairly obvious to me that your state attorney general is going to do nothing. Who do you turn to? The U.S. Justice Department?
Yeah, we filed an investigation request also with the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Wisconsin. And the Attorney General isn't the only. I mean, the Attorney General has an election integrity task force, but it also has district attorneys from around the state, and we're hoping they'll get the information as well.
What happens if nothing happens? When I say what happens if nothing happens, I mean if nothing happens in response to what one Wisconsin has done in terms of these inquiries with the authorities. What happens if nothing happens?
Well, I mean, we are going to continue to push this and make it an issue, because when you disenfranchise a legal voter, you are taking one of their basic citizenship.
Sure.
And we are going to do everything we can to not allow that to happen. We want elections in Wisconsin that are fair, that are clean, and that are accurate. And despite this alleged voter caging scheme, we will continue to be vigilant in ensuring that everyone has access to the ballot on Election Day, and we will do everything that we can to make sure that happens.
You know, I always have a hard time. This shows my prejudging, I guess, but I have a hard time thinking of Wisconsin politically in any terms other than being a progressive state. And yet you have office holders up there who are bound and determined to destroy representative government. How did this happen in Wisconsin? I live in Georgia. I know how it happened here. I live in Bohunkville. But how did it happen in Wisconsin?
Well, it just goes to where we're at, Mike. I mean, we are in an age right now where conservatives take their marching orders from, you know, a lunatic ex-governor who twitters, and that's what defines a lot of the message on the right. And so we are becoming a more fractured country, you know, and let's not kid ourselves. These Tea Party events that started happening in March and April of 2009, they were planning those things before they rolled old man Cheney off the Capitol dais.
Yeah, that's true.
They were bound and determined to derail the agenda of President Obama, who was trying to bring the country together, and they simply said no.
And so much of this is being funded by the Koch brothers, the Americans for Prosperity, which is neither. I don't consider it about prosperity or about Americans. I don't know who these people are. Oh, and by the way, somebody just sent me an email and said, don't use the term voter fraud. That's implying that the voters are doing something wrong. Election fraud is the term that we should be using. I certainly stand corrected on that one. What would you suggest to people who are going to vote, Democrats, no matter who they are, they can be white as opposed to minority. They can be people in their 50s as opposed to students. And it seems like the more vulnerable segments of the population are being targeted by these people. But what do you suggest to voters when they show up to vote on election day? How should they come? Should they come with a baseball bat? Should they come with a birth certificate? What should they come with to vote, given the fact that so many of them are going to be challenged by these right-wing freaks?
Well, for one thing, you know that, like, you can produce all the birth certificates you want, and they'll still say you're Kenyan.
It's true.
I think that, the most important thing is be prepared ahead of time.
Right.
You know, if your state requires registration ahead of time, if you don't have same day or election day registration, make sure that your registration is intact and that it's solid before you go in there.
Mm-hmm.
We always advise people in Wisconsin to be ready in case you're challenged. And take what you need. We don't want to. It's a double edged sword because you don't want to tell people to take your photo ID because you shouldn't have you shouldn't need a photo ID in order to vote.
Right.
In America.
Right. Right. Well, we have the same law here in Georgia now. I think it's been challenged in the courts, and I think the courts have upheld it. I don't know where it is here in Georgia, but the same effort was made by the same people. How do people get more information about this in Wisconsin? Is that the Save Wisconsin's Vote 2010.org website?
Absolutely, and they should contact their local election officials, League of Women Voters, to make sure what all the rules are. I mean, the important thing is that people get out there and vote.
Right, right.
If people don't go out and vote, they're giving away their ability to have a say in the process.
Yeah, and that's one of the tragedies present day or current day America. Politics, like nature, abhors a vacuum, and if people do not vote, then these right wingers step in and the game is over. Scott, thanks a lot for taking time to talk with us tonight, okay?
Mike, thank you very, very much for the invitation, and thanks to all your listeners for listening in, and come visit SaveWisconsinsVote2010.org.
Now, Wisconsin in that website is plural, Save Wisconsin.
Well, you can get there either way.
Either way, okay.
Yeah.
Or yeah, so it can be Save Wisconsin or Save Wisconsin with an S on it, Vote2010.org.
Absolutely.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot for talking with us. Take care.
All right, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Scott Ross is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now, and they are doing what they can to prevent the theft of yet another election in this country. So go to their website, SaveWisconsinsVote2010.org. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Jesus votes Republican and he saved us from Al Gore. He believes in trickle down and shipping jobs offshore. He wishes all them unemployed would stop trying to tax his wealth. Your brother's keeper just don't apply because it's everybody for himself.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. You've got to go to this website, Save Wisconsin's, and put an S on Wisconsin. Wisconsin's. As if it were plural. Save Wisconsin's Vote 2010.org. You've got to see what Scott Walker and his organization have put together. It's astonishing. just astonishing. There's another website that they're involved with, onewisconsinnow.org. So either one, savewisconsinsvote2010.org or onewisconsinnow.org. Now, one of the rules in radio, you never give out two email addresses at the same time or two websites at the same time because it gets everybody confused. No, you people can handle this, all right? But check out especially Save Wisconsin's Vote2010.org. That's the one that there's the audio, there's the video, there's the transcripts, there's everything you want to see about these criminal sons of bitches. Now, it's very infrequent that you get to see the planning stages of a crime. When was the last time you got to hear, three or four people sit around and say, well, let's go rob the trust company bank down on the corner. Okay, here's what we're going to do. When was the last time you got to hear Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice and George Bush and the rest of these criminals sit around saying, okay, well, now, look, we've got to pretend like this is a surprise when these guys hit us. So let's, you know, when was the last time you got to hear a crime in the planning stages? Huh? Well, here's your chance. Go to Save Wisconsin's, plural, Save Wisconsin's Vote 2010.org. And like Scott said, it's one thing to see what these rat bastards have planned for Wisconsinites, but don't for a second think that it's only in Wisconsin. A, B, and the way to thwart these criminal thugs is to go vote. Go vote.
Well, Mike, you always tell us you're not going to vote anymore because you've given up.
No, that's not what I've said. What I've said is I am no longer a, what we call in the South, a yellow dog Democrat. I'd have to open a jugular vein or somebody would have to before I would ever vote Republican. But it's time to take a look at the candidate. If there are candidates running for office in Wisconsin or re-election, and you know who we're talking about, and you don't support them, okay, that's your business. Do whatever you want to do. But don't not vote, unless you've just completely given up. If you've just completely given up, okay. And someone so inclined can make a strong argument for saying to hell with it. You know, the hell with it. If that's where you're at, okay. But if that is where you're at, and this thing slides into the hands, truly into the hands of the corporatists, the capitalists who are determined to strangle this country alive, if that does happen and you did not resist, and I know a lot of people say, Malloy, come on, what the hell are you talking about? Your vote doesn't mean anything. Come on, Malloy, you know. Okay. If that's your point of view, then I certainly understand. A strong argument can be made that the system has become so corrupted that there's no point in continuing to participate. If that's your belief, and it's based not on listening to some half-assed talk show host, but if it's based on your conviction, then far be it from me to tell you to override your convictions and go participate yet again in a process that you have deemed corrupt. But if you're not quite ready to give up, get off your ass and go vote on November 2nd. You know, what can I say? What can I say? Susan in Madison, Wisconsin wrote, Mike, for your information, this was on the evening news in Wisconsin. I don't know. I guess she means last night. I don't know which perpetrator said this, but the response, one of the thugs trying to destroy voting in Wisconsin, one of the thugs said, quote, I think we know who recorded our meeting and we're not letting them in our meetings anymore, end quote. No remorse, no apologies, no shame. Just a statement that, quote, we will find someone to accuse and exclude them from our future meetings so we can continue our malicious plans in secret. Well, yeah, Susan, they're certainly not going to stand up in front of
God and apple pie and the flag and say, yeah, we're trying to destroy the very system that our boys in Afghanistan are dying to preserve. They're not going to say that. Keith in Milwaukee wrote, quote, or Mike, this vote caging operation is also complemented by dozens of billboards that were put up by the Republicans the day after our primary. These billboards, which are in blue-collar areas of Milwaukee, as well as the Hispanic section of Waukesha City, threaten high fines and imprisonment for supposed illegal voting, and even feature the picture of a family behind bars. In fact, the whole ad is designed to resemble an old-fashioned jail cell with steel bars superimposed on the pictures on the billboard. Yeah, well, the determination of the 21st century American fascists to absolutely take over this country, that determination is very, very strong, very powerful. They will do anything, including allowing an attack on this country that killed thousands of people. So, you know, forewarned is forearmed, I guess. These are perilous times. Prepare yourself accordingly, right? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Did you go to the website that I humbly requested that you go to? If you haven't, please go. SaveWisconsinsVote2010.org. Our education affairs correspondent sent me an email, about a week ago, and I never made it on the air. I think I lost it. I could probably find it in my email file, but what Kay was writing about was Democrats who are running for election or re-election just running as if their asses were on fire away from the health care reform. As weak as it is, this drives me totally insane, all right? The Democrats in Congress voted for so-called Obamacare. It is... you know, I don't know how to talk about this again and again and again. It is not single payer. It is not what I would do were I king of America for a week. It's not what I would put into play. It's not what a lot of progressives and liberals wanted to put to be the new method of delivering health care in this country or health insurance in this country. But it sure as hell is better than what it was. And I think, I don't know. Don't even ask me. There's been so much there's been so many lies put out there. And this is a problem. You read these polls, 63%, 42% of Americans don't want anything to do with Obamacare, primarily because they don't have a clue as to what it's about. Media in this country, electronic media, is totally
dominated. Radio and television is absolutely, it's like a crack house. And it's run by the drug dealers, who are these Republican bastards, these right-wingers, the teabaggers, whatever you want to call them. And from their position of media dominance, they have filled the airwaves 24/7 with lies and distortions and stuff that just makes me so angry sometimes. I really do want to smash somebody right in their face. I just, you know, I almost lust after that. I just... Calm down, Mike. But the Democrats running away from the very thing they voted for, because since the vote, the Republicans and the right-wingers have convinced so many people in this country that Obamacare, so-called, is going to, I don't know what's it going to do. Is it going to make them impotent? Is it going to make them menopausal? What's it going to do? The Democrats are displaying this disgusting, cowardly attitude. Every time the Republicans threaten a filibuster, the Democrats should just say, go ahead. Go ahead and filibuster. Let the American people hear. But what do they do? What do? They have a vote on cloture, and the vote doesn't go through, or it goes through the way the Republicans want it to go through, and then the Democrats all immediately go to have their diapers changed. Rather than going ahead with whatever the issue is and let these verminous son of a bitches go ahead and filibuster. Why don't they do that? Why don't the Democrats do that? Well, because they are cowards. Here's what the Democrat office holders and office seekers are running away from where it concerns health insurance reform, as weak as it's been. They're running away from the fact that kids can't be denied coverage anymore because of pre-existing medical problems. Democratic candidates don't want to talk about that. That's wonderful. Here's another thing they're running away from. Young people can stay on their parents' policy till age 26. That is a critical plus in a time when millions of people are unemployed, and so many of those people are young people, and hundreds of thousands are entering the workforce every day, or potentially should be entering the workforce, and can't, not every day, but every week, every month, whatever, every year, and can't get a job. And if they can't get a job, they can't afford to buy health insurance. So so-called Obamacare allows these young people to stay on their parents' policy until age 26. Why aren't the Democratic candidates talking about that as a good thing? What else? No more lifetime caps on coverage. If you have a chronic disease that perhaps requires surgeries, expensive surgeries, the insurance companies until tomorrow can put a cap on how much they have to pay. Once you reach that cap, if you do reach it, you're on your own, boobala. You're completely on your own. Can't do that anymore. These filthy, disgusting, predatory insurance companies can't do that anymore. Why aren't the Democrats talking about that instead of peeing their pants? Insurers can no longer cancel you simply because you get sick or ill or need care. They can't now send a certified letter to you as you're laying in your hospital bed saying, pursuant to section 29, chapter 40, blah, 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 your policy is going to be terminated, blah, 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 blah. Can't do that anymore. Why aren't the Democratic candidates for public office touting that? They can't cancel you anymore. The insurance companies can't cancel you because of a minor mistake on your original application. They can now. You didn't tell them you had a zit. You didn't tell them that you had, what's that called, cystic acne. You can't tell them that you used, what was that? What's that chemical? Accutane. And now you have skin cancer, and they're saying, well, there's a direct link between your cystic acne and Accutane and skin cancer, and you didn't put it on your application, so we're not paying. Can't do that anymore. Can't do that. Why aren't the Democratic office holders seeking election or re-election, why aren't they talking about that? If a claim is filed by you today, your insurance company can deny the claim, and that's where it stops. That's it. And if they want to, they can drop your coverage. Because of a dispute in that claim, starting tomorrow, they can't do that. Insurers have to continue covering you if there is a dispute until it's resolved. Why aren't the Democratic candidates for public office touting that and cheering it and telling the voters, look, this won't happen to you anymore? Until tomorrow, if you're having a heart attack and you call an ambulance or you call 911 and an ambulance shows up, and they take you to an emergency room in a hospital that's close to save your life, and it's not a hospital in your insurer's network, they won't pay. We had that happen to us, didn't we? When Kathy had one of those tachycardia attacks, and she was about, I don't know, 5 minutes from dying. And they took her, the EMS people got her stabilized and took her to a hospital, an emergency room. And I don't know, about a month later, the claim, what was the claim? A couple grand? Was denied by our insurance company until Kathy wrote them a letter and said, you're out of your goddamn minds. What do you mean it's denied? I'm dying? And you want me to say, are you in my network? Well, the insurance company paid up, didn't they? Sort of. What did they pay? They paid more. Okay. Starting tomorrow, that can't happen to you. Why aren't the Democrats who are seeking election or re-election pushing that and letting the American people know about that? Screening is now covered. I had a colonoscopy recently, about 6-7 months ago. And if you haven't had one, you should get one, especially if you're 50 or older. It's not as bad as you think. As a matter of fact, if you have the right kind of doctor, when it's all over, you'll give him a kiss. But I had one. And in order to, they cost about $3,000. And in order to get that, where it's covered with my insurance company, I had to mention, I had to say, well, yeah, there's a little hemorrhoid bleeding. Was there? I'm not going to tell you. But if I wouldn't have said that, then it would have been screening and not diagnostic. Oh, by the way, the colonoscopy was completely clear. I'm sort of like Katie Couric. But my point is, after tomorrow, they can't do that anymore with breast exams or colonoscopies. The screening will now be covered. Why aren't Democratic office seekers talking about this?
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Okay, right before the break, those are the items that the Republicans did not want you to have. And you got to wonder why. And now the Democrats are tucking their tails between their legs and fleeing like the cowardly bastards so many of them are. The health care reform says kids can't be denied coverage because of pre-existing medical problems. Young people can stay on parents' policy to age 26. No more lifetime monetary caps on coverage. Insurers can't cancel you when you get sick. Can't cancel you because of minor mistakes on original apps. Insurers have to continue covering you if there's a dispute until resolved. Emergency room care covered even if out of network. Screening now covered. Colonoscopies, breast exams, and so on and so forth. These are the items the Republicans did not want you to have. I'll say it again. Why are the Democrats running away from those changes? Are they bad? Here's that email Kay wrote. Mike, I can't take anymore. You've said many times that everyone has his or her tipping point. I reached mine this morning. This is about 2 weeks ago. When I picked up the New York Times and read this headline. Democrats ads keep the party at arm's length. After 8 years of Republican criminality, the Democrats have managed to lose their legitimacy in less than 2 years, and they are running from being Democrats. Excuse me, but shouldn't the Republicans be on the run? Of course they should. But that would require a Democratic Party whose members have blanking spines. Instead, the Democrats chose not to do an about-face on the criminal policies of the Bush administration, which are the reason this country is in the sorry state it is. Democrats caved to Republicans on health care reform and ended up with a package that does not go anywhere near far enough. And Democrats continue to live in fantasy land where people reach across the aisle in the name of bipartisanship. After 8 years of the Bush crime family and 2 years of nothing but obstructionism, they still don't get it? Really? You've got to be blanking kidding me. I also just made the mistake of watching a few minutes of Chris Matthews' show, during which he was prattling on about American exceptionalism, as in, only in this country could someone with a name like Barack Hussein Obama rise through the ranks. I'm going to give Matthews the benefit of the doubt here and assume that he is referring to ethnic or national minorities having the same opportunities as the Caucasian majorities in many Western countries. But if that's what he is saying, he's displaying the appalling arrogance and ignorance that seems to have become a hallmark among insulated Americans. According to, wait a minute, when you consider the spinelessness of the Democrats, the collective amnesia of an electorate seemingly poised to reelect the bastards who drove this country off a cliff, and add in the incredible arrogance and ignorance of far too many Americans, especially the ones in mainstream media, well, like I said, I think I may have reached my own personal tipping point. K. I certainly understand that frustration. I know you do too, right, Truth Seeker? I mean, say what we want about so-called Obamacare, and I've busted it left, right, and every way from Sunday, because I am a single-payer guy, okay? I believe in, yes, socialized health care, not socialized medicine, you right-wing freaks. Medicine is medicine. Socialized health care, health insurance, you're damn right. But as a stopgap measure, maybe, until this country matures to the point where that makes sense, Obamacare, so-called, provides what the capitalist system refuses to provide. I mean, just on the kid thing. And you know, I don't know how many people who listen to this program, probably not that many, who have young children. But you may have nieces and nephews. You may have grandchildren somewhere in your extended family, whether it is blood relatives or friends. You have little kids. There are little kids there, unless you're totally isolated. Maybe you come in contact with children in your profession, whatever it is. Does it make sense to you to say that for-profit insurance companies had the right up until tomorrow to deny coverage to a kid because of a so-called pre-existing condition? I went off on this the other night. I don't want to do it again, but you rat bastard right-wingers, you have a pre-existing condition too. It's called death, and it's hanging over your head, and I don't care how evil and mean and vicious and vile you want to do, that pre-existing condition is going to devour your ass at some point. So why do you have to be so hateful and so mean and so egotistical and so self-centered and such a scum-sucking right-winger that you would say to your representative, I don't want you voting for health care for children with pre-existing conditions. Screw them! Really? Well, just remember what your Jesus said about children. It is moi, c'est moi, indeed. 25 before the hour. I think we're going to do a podcast trivia tomorrow night, right? Oh, that's right. Our phones are knocked out. If the phones are available, we will. Because Friday, I think we're going to have a rebroadcast on Friday. I don't know. What the hell do I know? So just heads up. I got something here from Jean or John Le Carré, the former British spy and author who wrote Spy Who Came In From the Cold and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and The Constant Gardener, yada, yada, yada. He was on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now yesterday and read a bit from his book that was published in 2003. Well, not a book. It was a widely read anti-war essay in 2003, just before the Bush-Cheney crime family ordered the invasion and occupation of Iraq. It's called The United States of America Has Gone Mad. I think I read it back then. I'm pretty sure. But I'm going to try to get that tonight. I asked you earlier, what is antinomianism? Antinomianism. The word is antinomian. And the condition of being antinomian is antinomianism. I had a hell of a time with that one. You know, before I go to dictionary.com, I try to figure it out by looking at its Latin or Greek root. And I'm looking at that going, okay, what the hell is that? Let me read the email from Tom in Joshua Tree, California first. Mike, the question is often asked, how do these SOBs get away with all their lies, violence, heartless inhumanity, sexual abuse and perversion, all their petty and grand larcenies, all their hypocrisies, all their crimes against humanity, nature, and institutions, and just keep getting elected by the very victims who live their lives as prey or lab rats or the slave pool? He's referring the SOBs, of course, to the right-wingers. He goes on. The legitimizing doctrine for this obscenity is called antinomianism. It is taught every Sunday in church, synagogue, and mosque. It was coined, the term was coined in the Dark Ages to mean that divine law supersedes civil and moral authority. It was used by Catholics to carry out their inquisitions contrary to civil law, then by Protestants who rose up against the Catholic laws, and by Puritans to butcher and murder women and children during the witch trials. When George Bush said, quote, the Constitution is just a goddamn piece of paper, end quote, and says that he listens to a higher father when taking America to war, it is simply what he learned as a good Christian. And his illegal and criminal actions prove that a man who is inspired by God need not fret over earthly law or consequence. Similarly, any facts of life and nature that do not comport with the word of God is a heretical crime against God, religion, and the people of faith. It is what motivates Newt Gingrich to solemnly proclaim his stand against using Muslim law within the American judiciary when everybody, he says, knows we are a Christian nation whose laws must conform to the Southern Baptist Bible if they are to stand at all. The same insane doctrine of antinomianism operates in the proposition that we must let the market decide what is of value and not surrender to the ridiculous sentiments of hungry, sick, poor, uneducated, out-of-work families that people constantly whimper about. It is the doctrine at work in the Supreme Court decision of People United that strips away the civil rights of citizens and hands them over entirely to corporations. And it is even what liberals in name only do when they censor and ignore the real issues of nation and state in order to become the well-mannered, loyal opposition like Herr Obermann, who is paid by General Electric to titillate but never push alternate energy beyond the quaint, and to avoid all critical analysis of economic and military structures. As if the blood-sucking corporate monsters of thievery, deceit, and treachery do not exist or pertain to daily life. In each case, the higher law, the divine law, the patriotic corporate or patriarchal law must always be obeyed on earth as it is in heaven and corporate boardrooms. And since all earthly laws are sinful constructs of the evil human heart and mind, they are an affront to God and his chosen. I don't know what the psychological term or equivalent is for antinomianism, but it must be a disorder related to control, domination, and sadistic psychosis. But one thing is for sure, if the sane and conscious people can't muster the force necessary to counteract this wave of viciously pernicious insanity, we will all be burned to death by Earth's Inquisition called global warming. So how do we stop them from killing us all on the altar of their gods unless we destroy their gods? We have to go after their gods because that's all those idiots will ever listen to. So that's why. Tom in Joshua Tree, California. Antinomianism. A person who maintains that Christians are freed from the moral law by virtue of grace as set forth in the gospel. You know, I wonder that. Thanks, Tom. I wondered why George Bush was able to make the statement, the Constitution's a goddamn piece of paper, and have it either reported wryly by these halfwits who occupy cable television 24/7, or have it ignored altogether. You know, I just wonder, what? What's he talking about? And when he said, I answer to when somebody asked him, do you take advice from your father, who also invaded Iraq? Do you take advice from your father regarding your invasion, occupation of Iraq? And he said, well, I answer to a higher father. And when he told the Israeli, it wasn't the Israeli defense minister, it was some Israeli government official, when Bush said to him, that it was in a conversation with God that it was revealed to him, George Bush, that he was supposed to invade Iraq. I mean, that's madness. But there it is. There's the term. To honestly believe that secular law, the laws of civilization, as weak as they are, as Swiss cheesed as they have become, that those laws are garbage. How many times have you heard these Christian crazy political candidates talking in that vein, that you know, God's law has to be obeyed? How many times did we hear? It only took once. Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson in that conversation of dunces after 9/11, that where Falwell insisted, was it Falwell or was it the other freak? I think it was Falwell, that God had dropped his veil of protection over the United States because of gay people and feminists and liberals. Jesus God. Where do these people come from? Well, I've asked that a million times. So, John Le Carre wrote about the United States going mad. This was written 7 years ago. America has entered one of its periods of historical madness. But this is the worst I can remember, worse than McCarthyism, worse than the Bay of Pigs, and in the long term, potentially more disastrous than the Vietnam War. The reaction to 9/11 is beyond anything Osama bin Laden could have hoped for in his nastiest dreams. As in McCarthy times, the freedoms that have made America the envy of the world are being systematically eroded. The combination of compliant U.S. media and vested corporate interests is once more ensuring that a debate that should be ringing out in every town square is confined to the loftier columns of the East Coast press. The imminent war was planned years before bin Laden struck, but it was he who made it possible. Without bin Laden, the Bush junta would still be trying to explain such tricky matters as how it came to be elected in the first place, or Enron, or its shameless favoring of the already too rich, or its reckless disregard for the world's poor, or the ecology and a raft of unilaterally abrogated international treaties. They might also have to be telling us why they support Israel in its continuing disregard for UN resolutions. But bin Laden conveniently swept all that under the carpet. The Bushies are riding high. Now 88% of Americans want the war, we are told. The U.S. defense budget has been raised by another $60 billion to around $360 billion. A splendid new generation of nuclear weapons is in the pipeline so we can all breathe easy. Quite what war 88% of Americans think they are supporting is a lot less clear. A war for how long, please? At what cost in American lives? At what cost to the American taxpayer's pocket? At what cost, because most of those 88% are thoroughly decent and humane people, at what cost in Iraqi lives? More of this when we come back.
Distract us from the fact. It's about oil.
It's about oil.
It's about greed.
It's about greed.
It's about rich white men getting richer. It's about fear.
It's about fear.
And control.
And control.
Of those barrels of black gold.
Texas steel.
Yeah, step up, folks, to another war where we never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're depending on.
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, John Le Carré, spy, former British spy, author, wrote a tract, an essay back in 03. The United States of America has gone mad. I'm reading an excerpt from it that was on Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman's program, yesterday. How Bush and his junta succeeded in deflecting America's anger from bin Laden to Saddam Hussein is now one of the great public relations conjuring tricks of history. But they swung it. A recent poll tells us that one in two Americans now believe Saddam was responsible for the attack on the World Trade Center. But the American public is not merely being misled. It is being browbeaten and kept in a state of ignorance and fear. The carefully orchestrated neurosis should carry Bush and his fellow conspirators nicely into the next election. Those who are not with Mr. Bush are against him. Worse, they are with the enemy. Which is odd, because I'm dead against Bush, but I would love to see Saddam's downfall, just not on Bush's terms, and not by his methods, and not under the banner of such outrageous hypocrisy. The religious cant that will send American troops into battle is perhaps the most sickening aspect of this surreal war to be. Bush has an arm lock on God, and God has very particular political opinions. God appointed America to save the world in any way that suits America. God appointed Israel to be the nexus of America's Middle Eastern policy, and anyone who wants to mess with that idea is A, anti-Semitic, B, anti-American, C, with the enemy, D, a terrorist, and so on. What is at stake is not an imminent military or terrorist threat, but the economic imperative of U.S. growth. What is at stake is America's need to demonstrate its military power to all of us, to Europe and Russia and China and poor mad little North Korea, as well as the Middle East, to show who rules America at home and who is to be ruled by America abroad. The most charitable interpretation of Tony Blair's part in all this is that he believed that by riding the tiger he could steer it. He can't. Instead, he gave it a phony legitimacy and a smooth voice. And now I fear the same tiger has him penned into a corner, and he can't let go. It is utterly laughable that, at a time when Blair has talked himself against the ropes, neither of Britain's opposition leaders can lay a glove on him. But that's Britain's tragedy, as it is America's. As our governments spin, lie, and lose their credibility, the electorate simply shrugs and looks the other way. I cringe when I hear my prime minister lend his head perfect sophistries to this colonialist adventure. His head prefix sophistries to this colonialist adventure. His very real anxieties about terror are shared by all sane men. What he can't explain is how he reconciles a global assault on Al-Qaeda with a territorial assault on Iraq. We are in this war, if it takes place, to secure the fig leaf of our special relationship, to grab our share of the oil pot. And because, after all, the public hand-holding in Washington and Camp David, Blair has to show up at the altar. But will we win, Daddy? Of course, child. It will all be over while you're still in bed. Why? Because otherwise, Mr. Bush's voters will get terribly impatient and may decide not to vote for him. But will people be killed, Daddy? Nobody you know, darling. Just foreign people. Can I watch it on television? Only if Mr. Bush says you can. And afterwards, will everything be normal again? Nobody will do anything horrid anymore? Hush, child, and go to sleep. Last Friday, a friend of mine in California drove to his local supermarket with a sticker on his car saying, "Peace also is patriotic." It was gone by the time he'd finished shopping. John Le Carré, writing all those years ago. Courtesy of Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Yesterday. Oh, I didn't get to Prairie 2's missive. We'll do it tomorrow because it's a good one. I'm completely out of things to say for tonight. And all I can do pretty much is reiterate our interview with Scott Ross. Check out the website. SaveWisconsinsVote2010.org or 1WisconsinNow.org. Find out what this unholy triad of the Koch brothers fronting a phony organization called Americans for Prosperity. And the other two legs of this stool, one is the Teabag organization and the other one is the Republican Party. And what they are going to attempt to do is what they've done many times in the last 10 or 15 years to make sure that voter activity is completely suppressed. This is election fraud of the highest degree. I hope they don't get away with it. It's one thing to declare the system broken. It's something else again to take advantage of the broken system and try to install a Nazi-like regime in the land of the free and the home of the brave, right? All right. After that lightning strike someplace in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains here tonight, I'm surprised we made it on the air. If you ever tune in some night and we're not here, just with no warning, it's something like that, okay? As far as our phones working, again, we'll try to get them working tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow night, all right? Oh, my God, I love this. Take care. Keep it lit. Oh, wait a minute. We're not finished. What the hell am I doing? We have another hour. Ah! Malloy, stay off the drugs. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. The in addition, as we were talking a little while ago with Scott, in addition to the vote caging, which is, as we mentioned, it's going to be happening all over the country. This is how right-wingers, teabaggers, Republicans, the Koch brothers, this is how they operate. Just remember, in the marketplace of ideas, Republican or conservative ideas never can compete with those of the progressive left. Never. So the ideas of the progressive left have to be distorted, and we have to be lied about. So, but other than that, the other night we were talking about the children's insurance coverage. Tomorrow, Thursday, the first little bits and pieces of the what the crazy bastards in this country call Obamacare goes into effect. And of course, one of the major overhauls is, as we've been talking about, the insurance companies can't deny, health insurance companies can't deny coverage to kids with pre-existing conditions. So they decided to drop the, you know, they just don't write, not going to write policies anymore. Just not going to write policies anymore. You know, the leading cause of death among children up to a certain age, from birth up to, what, Kathy, 12, the leading cause is accidents. It's not illness. So what the insurance companies are saying is they don't want to cover even one case of a child with leukemia, with childhood diabetes, with any sort of condition as rare as they are in kids that would require a payout from these leeching, rapacious bastards who run the health extortion industry. It's not health insurance, it's health extortion. Let's call it what it is. For God's sake, let's use the right language. So in talking about it, a couple of people emailed. I want to share one with you. This is from Susan. Regarding dropping children's coverage, she writes, Mike, if the U.S. were to find a terrorist organization stockpiling money for future terrorist acts, what would the government do? Would they seize all the assets? I think these insurance companies that have decided to duck out of insuring children are threatening children and their families with harm. They're certainly causing fear. Reagan fired the air traffic controllers on a whim. So why shouldn't Obama shut down these companies once and for all and be done with it? On the other hand, this is what he should have expected by trying to compromise with the insurance industry. The best solution is the one most of the people wanted. Nationalize it. Rather than try to get rid of these freaks with impossible snarls of legislation and right-wing resistance and posturing, just find a way to pull the plug. They are threatening an unknown number of children who cannot fight back. This is as good an excuse as any to completely toss the whole system out and go for single payer. Susan, I completely agree with your point of view. The only difference is the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization, they were not they fell under government rules and regulations to a far greater degree than the insurance industry. The insurance industry, there may be some guidelines. I haven't done any research on this. I'm just flying blind here. So if you know a lot more about this than I do and can put it into two sentences, go ahead and send it to me. But Reagan got away with doing what he was doing because of the status of air traffic controllers. They were not federal employees, but they worked under federal guidelines. Insurance agent industry is the sewer of capitalism. I mean, it is really the sewer, the very bottom, the stuff on the bottom of a septic tank, the stuff way down that, you know, you're supposed to throw boxes and boxes of beneficial bacteria into your septic system to get rid of these, you know, the filth, the stuff down there. That's what the health insurance industry has become. They are not interested to any extent. We've talked about this a million times. You know this already, not just you, Susan, but everybody. They are not interested in taking care of their insured. that's not even on their business plan. The only thing they are interested in doing is collecting premiums and denying payment. That's all. That is their sole function. When there are claims that they cannot deny, then they are forced to go ahead and pay them. And this is how they insulate themselves against charges of running a Ponzi scheme, massive fraud, interstate fraud, using the mails to defraud people. This is the only way to get around it. Because the insurance industry is nothing but a massive Ponzi scheme. Only it's not like most Ponzi schemes where you have to keep sucking money off the new suckers coming in order to pay out the suckers at the top. The insurance industry has all the money in the world. You think you think Wall Street has the money? Come on. So the part of your email that is exactly right, Susan, is that, the whole thing, I'm not criticizing your email. I'm just saying Reagan, Patco, Obama, the insurance industry, whole different situation. But the part I really truly agree with, and you know this from the very beginning, and you agree with it, and most Americans do, get these rapacious sons of bitches out of health coverage, health insurance. Make it single payer. Why Obama... This is the part I don't understand. Well, I mean, I do understand, because Obama is not what a lot of Democrats or liberals or progressives used to think he is or was. He's not. He's not that. He is a corporatist who is well-spoken and articulate and inexperienced in terms of governance. He should have known that the right wing was waiting for him to be sworn in so they could start carving out his heart, cutting his throat. The decision was made to figuratively behead him, and they have done it, and they will continue to do it, and Obama continues to act as though all he has to do is come up with the right set of words and magic incantations. Maybe that's where Christine O'Donnell could help him, to make the right wing decide to cooperate for the betterment of this country, the people, the kids. That's not going to happen, Mr. President. Not going to happen. Single payer is a way we should have our health insurance in this country. But barring a revolution, and interpret that word any way you want, single payer is not going to happen here. It had a chance. It's had several chances. Had a chance with Nixon. Had a chance with Carter. Had a chance with Lyndon Johnson. But those days are long gone. They're gone. They're gone. This country is now run by the corporatist segment of our political class. And they, in turn, are owned outright by the worst of the capitalist class. So, you want single payer in this country, among other things. You want single payer? Then lead the revolution in whatever manner or method or means that you understand that word. It could be a revolution... figuratively speaking, or not figuratively, but a revolution of ideas, a revolution of systems, or a revolution of violence. I mean, it's up to you. You decide. I'm just saying, it's not going to happen until there is a revolution. Remember, banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, and weapons production, all five of those should be nationalized. There should be no profit motive in any of those enterprises, banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, weapons production. You could add a couple more if you wanted to. And then eliminate weapons production. We had ample opportunity for that to happen, and it never did. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
As cloudy as I've been the night before, and I went seeking. are listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. It is 21 past the hour. One more thing. Yeah, one more on the health insurers that are dropping coverage for children ahead of the new rules that are going to affect tomorrow. Gene writes in, Mike, what do you expect? The United States is not civilized. Boy, that is so true in so many aspects, isn't it, huh? There goes that Malloy. He's so un-American. Yeah, I am very much un-American about those things that are immoral, unethical, murderous, lying, cheating, sneaking, poisonous. You betcha. Regarding, in a remote way, Reagan and the unions. You know, things really started to go to hell when Reagan fired all the PATCO employees, right? PATCO members, I should say. A lot of people date the 30-year slide into the pit in this country with Reagan, with the onset of the Reagan era, Reaganomics. Even his own budget director, who came up with the theories of supply-side economics, has written a book saying that the whole thing was a scam. Even George Herbert Walker Bush called it voodoo economics. I mean, come on. We all knew. We knew at the time. And we are now experiencing the result, the ultimate result of Reaganomics. There's still one more step to go, and that is the total breakdown of our economic system, the total breakdown, and its replacement with a form of capitalism that will resemble in several ways the old landowner and serf relationship of the 11th century Europe. So, you know, Prairie, too, who writes economic affairs report for us periodically, keeps telling people to stock up on canned goods. I have a couple other people, our Hopi Indian friend from Arizona, who stocks up on ammunition. you roll the dice. Other people who suggest, no, Prairie 2's wrong about canned goods, get dehydrated food. Of course, that prerequisite for dehydrated food is, when you want to eat it, is water. Oh, God, I don't believe I'm talking about this stuff. I really don't. But it started with Reagan, and we're at this point now. Reagan's big effort, being the senile as he was, and I don't say that contemptuously. I say it from a medical standpoint. He was, I guess the more proper word is early Alzheimer's. My generation used to call that senility. So as Alzheimer-y as he was, with Alzheimer's already taking control of his mind, Reagan did exactly as he was scripted. He was easier to manipulate than Bush. Reagan, I have the feeling, and I think his wife Nancy knew this, that Reagan thought he was in the role of a president for 8 years. It was just another Hollywood production. Guess what? Guess what? A professor of political science at Notre Dame is the co-author of a new study about unions in 14 nations. His research shows that people who live in countries thick with union membership are a happier lot, regardless of whether they're in the union or not. His name is Benjamin Radcliffe, professor of political science at Notre Dame. And he says there's a direct effect of being a member and a sort of indirect effect if you're not in these countries that are heavily unionized. The study that he conducted crunched life satisfaction data from several European countries as well as Japan, Australia, and the United States. As the report notes, happiness with one's life increasingly means happiness at work. And so Radcliffe and his colleagues look to see what brings joy to the 9-to-5ers. In an oversimplified word, unions. The report says for those who are members, there are all the obvious gains, such as job security, decent salaries, decent hours, decent benefits. But for workers who aren't union members, there is what Radcliffe calls an indirect effect. He says, quote, people who have union jobs like their jobs better, and that puts pressure on other employers to extend the same benefits and wages to compete with the union shops, end quote. Why is this news? I mean, I appreciate the fact that Professor Radcliffe has put this together, Benjamin Radcliffe, but what about this is newsworthy? What is it that becomes newsworthy when a report says workers are happier when they have job security, decent salaries, decent hours, decent benefits? I mean, what is that? Is that not so blatantly obvious? It's like smacking you in the face with a flopping tuna or something. Bang! With a fish. More on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. I really am.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows.
Why are
the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Uh, 25 before the hour. So the study. Study by this professor of political science at Notre Dame in Indiana. He's co-author of a new study about unions in 14 nations, and the research is obvious. People who live in countries thick with union membership are a happier lot, regardless of whether they're in the union or not. Professor Benjamin Radcliffe is his name. He tells, or he says in the report, there's a direct link or effect of being a member, and sort of an indirect effect if you're not. And as if to preempt the complaints of the people at Cato Institute, libertarian outfit that believes union membership is of the devil, the study also says that the subset of union members making the highest salaries don't attribute their happiness to unions. It's the lower paid people who find contentment through organized labor. So if a union member who's making 100 grand a year may feel that, well, I'm making 100 grand a year because of my my dedication to the principles of Ayn Rand. You know, think whatever you want to think. It doesn't make any difference. Also, he writes, on the whole, there is a causal relationship between happiness and the density of unions. Denmark ranks near the top in both categories. United States, by contrast, ranks in the bottom third of nations for happiness among the countries studied. Professor Radcliffe says there's a reason for that. Yeah, of course there is. Now, this takes me back to something that Clint Gold wrote in 1999 in the Tulsa World newspaper about what liberals, progressives, and at one time, not now, but at one time, Democrats had done for workers. And among other things that came as a result of the union movement in this country, the union movement in tandem with Democrats and liberals and progressives, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment insurance, welfare, not just for the poor. The poor in this country don't get welfare anymore. Corporations get the welfare. Corporations get all the welfare in this country, all that there is, and then they take everything. Loan programs. student grants, student loan programs. That's a result of pressure from union organizations. Safety laws, like Occupational Safety and Health Administration, rules and laws are put into effect that are not enforced anymore. They're still on the books, but they're not enforced. And because they're not enforced, you have miners dying in explosions. You have well drillers in the Gulf of Mexico being blown into pieces because rules and regulations are not enforced. I mean, it goes on and on. The rules are there. Environmental laws, wage laws, the right to collective bargaining. Now, collective bargaining brought about paid medical insurance, paid vacations, pensions, all this stuff is a result of the blood, literally, sweat and toil of labor unions. Women's rights, school lunch programs, all of it. And these filthy, disgusting, useless right-wingers, the teabaggers, the rest of these bastards, these conservatives, these Republicans, I don't care what you call them, the Koch brothers out of, where are they from, Missouri, Oklahoma, I don't know, they're like great, big, bulbous spiders, the Koch brothers. They creep and crawl around. They cast their web all over the place. Now they're trying to destroy an effort by California to cut back on emissions that are destroying the Earth's atmosphere. How do people like the Koch brothers, you know, rhetorical question, doesn't mean a thing. How are they allowed to continue to operate? Here are two guys whose organization, one of their organizations, Americans for Prosperity, the Americans they're referring to in there are themselves and their cohort, maybe 11,000 families in the entire United States. That's who is entitled to, in their minds, the prosperity. But how are people like the Koch brothers allowed to continue to do what they're doing? These murderous parasites who've never done a goddamn thing in their lives to be billionaires. Nothing. They live and feed and feast off of other people's labor. And once they get to a point where they're as wealthy as they are, then they begin to infiltrate organizations that are trying to do good for the American people and destroy those organizations. I don't care if they're organizations about public health, public safety, and the environment, medical care, retirement plans. No matter what it is, these filthy Koch brothers, these miserable Koch brothers, continue to destroy everything they can get their hands on and laugh while they're doing it. That's the part that gets me. These people like Glenn Beck, another useful idiot for people like the Kochs, they laugh and giggle and hoot and holler at the damage that they're doing. These are pathological personalities. So my question is, why are they allowed to have so much effect on this entire society? A different time, different place, these people would be, I don't know, removed. From society, at least to the extent that they had any influence whatsoever. But they've gotten more publicity, the Koch brothers, in the past 6 months than they would like, because they're like cockroaches that skitter around at night and do their damage, spread their disease and their poison. Somebody flips on a light, bring, off they go. That's what the Koch brothers are. They're these two-legged bipedal cockroaches. Yeah. When will it stop? It's beyond the point of stopping. You know that as well as I do. It's beyond the point of stopping. Christopher Hitchens, who, if you believe some reports, has not very much time left on this mortal coil and is facing his imminent demise with as much panache as he can muster, has something at Slate.com he posted Monday. It's entitled From the N-Word to Code Words, The Evolution of the Race Card in American Politics. Just a little bit of it here. At the beginning of the summer, my conservative friend David Frum made a joking remark that stayed with me. The evolution of right-wing abuse of President Barack Obama, he said, was not unlike the evolution of American pornography. It took a long time for the appearance of things like bare breasts and pubic hair to occur. But once those thresholds had been crossed, it didn't take long for the most lurid things to be freely depicted and for the competition for obscenity to become ever more extreme. From told me, quote, everybody's afraid now of being outdone from the right. So when somebody eventually comes out and calls Obama an Afro-Nazi, it will go mainstream quite fast, end quote. That was several months ago. David Frum told Christopher Hitchens. Hitchens says, high marks for prescience on the part of David Frum. For Dinesh D'Souza to label Obama the equivalent of a Kenyan Mau Mau was one thing, but for former Speaker Newt Gingrich to endorse the analysis with such dispatch was quite another. What will they do for an encore? The race card game when I was young was a simple one. It used to be George Wallace and Orville Faulbus shouting about the N-words. As the 1960s advanced, this became less respectable, and with the defection of white Southerners to the Republican Party, more a matter of code words and signals. Nixon's Southern strategy was a relatively subtle example. George Bush Sr.'s use of the Willie Horton subliminal ad is another crude one. I would say that this began to change with Bill Clinton, the first politician to play the card twice. While running poorly and beset by sex scandals in New Hampshire in 1992, he left the campaign trail and returned to Arkansas to supervise the execution of a mentally disabled black man named Ricky Ray Rector, a prisoner so lobotomized by his own attempted suicide that when the executioners came to his cell, he left part of his so-called last meal behind for, in his words, later. Try imagining what would have been said about a Southern Republican governor who did the same thing during a tight election, but then try imagining a Southern Republican president, impeached for perjury and obstruction, rejoicing in the defense that he was America's first black chief executive, as Bill Clinton did. There's a little more here. We got a break, then we'll come back. Hitchens' point, of course, is one that you and I are both familiar with. It's just that Hitchens is articulate enough to put it into words and have it published at Slate, whereas you and I don't do that. But there's more here that I want to share with you about what he wrote, the evolution of the race card in American politics. That's what the entire teabag movement is about. That's exactly what they mean when these teabaggers get together and say things like, we have to take our country back. That's all they mean. That's the totality of what they mean. We'll be right back. The hour. Back to what Christopher Hitchens posted at Slate on Monday about the use of code words to attack Barack Obama on the racial basis that this country has applied, white people in this country have applied to people of color since, oh, I don't know, the past 350 years. As he says, the race card game when he was young was a simple one. It used to be Wallace or Orville Faulbus shouting the N-word. But then along came Bill Clinton. And yeah, one of the worst things Clinton did when he was running for election in 1992, he went back to Arkansas to oversee the execution of a black man who was I think his IQ numbers were something like 50. And it was really disgusting. And a lot of people on the, I remember the Nation magazine, in their endorsement, I believe they endorsed Bill Clinton over the reelection of George Herbert Walker Bush. Once it became clear that a third party candidate, a Green candidate, or someone who had as their first interest the future of this country, Clinton did not. I believe the Nation endorsed him. And when it came to the execution of Ricky Ray Rector, the Nation went into this convulsion of indecision. How to handle the fact that their candidate was supervising the execution of somebody who had the basic understanding of the world as a second grader. So anyway, and that man, of course, was Bill Clinton, who claimed to be the first black president, or somebody claimed it for him, and he was willing to accept it. And as Hitchens writes, a man who did actually become the first black president has been unusually forbearing when it comes to the race card. And he was originally very fortunate in those who played it against him. As Obama asked in his memoirs, who would have predicted that the Republicans in Illinois would have run a black man against him in the Illinois Senate race? An out-and-out extremist named Alan Keyes, who denounced him for not being the descendant of slaves and therefore not truly black. Do you remember that? You remember that? Alan Keyes saying that? Well, he doesn't. Obama doesn't come from slaves like I do. When the terrain shifted, and it was a question of Obama's being too much of an African-American, or in some critiques, too likely to be a Muslim, it was originally from Hillary Clinton's camp that most of the innuendos came. Remember her reply to the question about whether Obama was a Muslim, and she said, not as far as I know. Right? Remember that? Long before Glenn Beck had accused the president of being motivated by hatred for white people, the Hillary camp had been circulating the rumor that Michelle Obama was on tape with a speech denouncing whitey. This, you know, the Democratic Party doesn't need enemies. It is its own worst enemy. It's true that Rahm Emanuel later vetoed the appointment of her chief propagandist, Sidney Blumenthal, to a job at the State Department. But by that time, Obama had rewarded one of his chief taunters, Hillary Clinton, with the job of Secretary of State. Poor Barack Obama. The vagaries, Christopher Hitchens continues, the vagaries of the race card have, if anything, only increased since then. A huge number of liberals have already decided that in some way Muslims constitute a race of their own, or at any rate, that criticism of their religion can be construed as racist. The fact that the Quran contains many racist observations about Jews will mean that this card can and will be used in turn to turn an almost infinite number of tricks. Still, Hitchens writes, I predict that liberals will regret handing Muslims such a handy alibi for any criticism of their faith. And if there is anywhere a particular where Obama could have learned the dangers of the same card, the race card, it could well be, as described in David Remnick's biography, from his father's bitter experience of tribal fratricide in Kenya, which led to the murder of the country's most promising politician, Tom Mboya, at the dawn of independence. And so on and so on. Hitchens says it would be, or ought to be, dangerous if we ever get to the point where the charge of racism becomes so overused and hackneyed as to be meaningless. Such a term ought to retain its potency as a weapon of shame and disapproval. Yet there are times, I must confess, that I almost wouldn't miss it. Last week in Washington, D.C., we saw the culmination of a long and dire campaign to sabotage the reform of the city schools. For years, since the time of the disgraceful Marion Barry, a rumor has been circulating in the black wards of the Capitol that there is a thing called the Plan. This sinister scheme involves the deliberate erosion of black neighborhoods and communities in the interests of a white Hispanic ascendancy. That would make its supposed leader, a Korean-American named Michelle Rhee, who, as the city's chancellor of public schools, was willing to close hopeless schools and to fire illiterate and unqualified teachers. Despite the support of the Obama administration, the reform and the reformers have now been voted down. In a succession of articles, the Washington Post leading black columnist, Colbert King, more or less explicitly head-counted Mayor Adrian Fenty's non-black appointments and encouraged citizens to think with their epidermis. So in voting for the re-election of a black mayor and for the approved program of a black president, I can be held to have cast a white vote and to have played a race card without even knowing it. It is not only on the right that the auction of demagogy is operating, and the bids are headed downward. He makes very salient points. Race in America, though, that has always been the one aspect of acid, social acid in this country that I don't think ever will be eradicated. I really don't. There's not an American alive over the age of 6 who has not or does not experience the horror in one way or another of racism. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.